Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
That would be me from the Chateau. Great to have you with us on a beautiful Monday from the Sunbury Motor Studio. And today's show being brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com. We now welcome in the heart and soul of the show, the straw that stirs the drink, the engines of the car, Kevin Herr.
Wow. Now that's what I call an introduction. All right, now I can go and retire now. Happy. Thank you. That was nice.
Well, I know when Drew, Roger, and I talked, that was the plan.
That I'd retire happy?
Yeah, that you would hear this and quit.
Ah, there you go. All right. Mission accomplished. Nicely done. Only took you about a month and a half.
No. It's all been part of the plan. We would set you up and set you up and set you up, and then finally one day, out of nowhere,
bang.
I would say something so profound and so nice that you would sit there and go, it's time for me to quit.
Doesn't get any better than this.
Now imagine what we went through on our end.
Boy, a lot of planning.
All those days of setup.
That's a lot of planning there.
I had to, so many times. Can we do it today? Can we do it today?
Speaking of great little planning sessions, somebody on Sunday decided to send me a text of a news, breaking news, that Hines Ward signed with the Baltimore Ravens.
Ah, yes, April Fools, yes.
I did not bite on that one.
You didn't, huh?
No, I did not. Wow. No, I did not. I said, wait a minute. I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. That tearful, emotional goodbye, I'll forever be a... No, that's got... And then I realized who it came from, and then, okay, it's automatic. It's an April Fool's joke.
Yes. Our number is 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. And now it's April 2nd, and we can put that in the rearview mirror. Kentucky plays Kansas tonight. Oh, first of all, before we get to that, I'm sure we'd like to update the big Will Power win over the weekend.
Whoa, you actually know who won. I am deeply impressed. Yes, Will Power was the winner at Barber. A rather flat race, to be honest with you. A couple of great passing opportunities there at the track there at Barber, but it was lacking a little something.
Yeah, it's, believe me, anything that is in a road course fashion is always lacking.
Well, there wasn't as many passing opportunities as I'd hoped there would be with the, and again, all about the new engines and trying to learn how they work. The one thing that was missing, which would have made you happy, was the push to pass. They have not put that into play yet. They have not worked that in with the new turbocharged engines. So that'll make you happy as a purist.
I'm just happy that for the week we got it out of the way. Okay, so let's move on.
A little over a month to Indy.
Yes, a little more than a month.
Now, you have a big basketball game going on down in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. The officiating was very suspect on Saturday.
In one game or both games?
Both games.
Okay, I just wanted your opinion.
The block charge calls, the 50-50 calls were a struggle for this group. Both groups on Saturday.
That's putting it kindly.
I mean, it was a struggle. How the end of the game was handled, Kansas-Ohio State, struggle. I mean, early in the Kansas-Ohio State game, they called the foul on Relaford. You're going, poor Relaford standing on the wing with his hands down, looking around going, I did what? I didn't even touch anybody. Three of the six guys have worked Penn State games before. Now, one of the three working tonight's game has worked Penn State many times. The other two never have. Mark Whitehead, whom I have immense respect for and personally like, and is about as personal a guy as you're going to run into, is going to referee, be one of the referees tonight. So Whitehead gets the job. Dick and I are both very big on the job Mark does. And he's a huge IRL fan.
Well, good. I'm glad.
No, he's not.
Well, what I was going to say was the Sporting News actually kind of agreed with you in a column today online talking about John Adams sitting as the NCAA coordinator of referees grading out everything and said, and I quote, I sat helplessly watching his both crews in the national semifinals miss call after call, erring yes. in almost every block charge situation.
Right. Yeah.
That pretty much pretty much puts it in perspective,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, that sums it up. That sums it up.
Now, actually, that was Jay Bieler. That was Jay that actually made that comment from ESPN, but it was quoted in the Sporting News. I wanted to share that with you.
Yes. So it was a shaky day. Now you have Kentucky and Kansas. Last week you brought up the topic that Gary Williams floated, that Kentucky could beat an NBA team.
Right. I did not say that. I brought that
comment up. I know you didn't say it.
I just want to clarify.
Now, as you know, I am not anywhere near a gambler. Other than doing this show with you.
It's an understatement, but okay.
I'm not. And people will ask me before the game, what's the spread in the game? And I'll say, geez, I don't know. I don't keep track. But to their credit, as we know, they are very, very close. They say the point spread is 7, and all of a sudden the game's like a 6 to 8 point game where it swings one way or the other. And so somebody asked, if the Washington Wizards were to play Kentucky, what would the spread be? What do you think the number was?
20.
Too low.
Really?
Too low.
Well, I felt pretty confident with 20, to be honest.
Too low.
More than 20.
Yeah.
30. 30? That might be a little extreme. 20, I feel comfortable with. 30, nah, it's a little too much.
Think about this for a second. Kentucky has a 12-man roster, right? 13-man roster.
Right.
They say that there are 6 NBA players in that roster, right?
Okay.
How many NBA players do you think are on the Wizards roster?
Well, technically all of them.
Yes, exactly. Every single one of them is an NBA player. Every one of them is an NBA player.
I get the point.
As opposed to half the roster having potential NBA players. Last year, Kemba Walker dominated postseason play. The 5-game run by UConn in 5 days to win the Big East. The 6-game run to win the NCAA championship. 11 games. The best of the best. Kemba Walker was the MOP of last year's tournament. Most outstanding player. He barely starts for the Charlotte Bobcats. Other people are playing much more for Charlotte, and Charlotte's not very good. But he can't crack. He didn't just walk in the league and be the star. Very few do that. Derrick Rose did that, walked in the league, was a star. LeBron walked in the league, he was a star. Even took Kobe a little bit to get going. Even Michael Jordan made the move from North Carolina to Chicago. It was great. Rookie of the year, first year, the whole thing. But the Bulls were not the Bulls that they became in the 90s and the 80s. Still took him a little while to get some personnel around him. But that's not and in the tournament, you will notice once again for the 24th consecutive year, a top 4 seed is going to win the championship. Kevin, of course, early on, talking about all the upsets.
There were a few. I did not say that they were going to last until the Final Four, which is why my Final Four was all but intact but one.
There was a rash. I think if people thought there was a rash of upsets, or there were the two big upsets. Okay, two 15s beating twos.
Right.
Huge, no doubt. But for the most part, like it does every year, the tournament settles into, all right?
And I think that happened somewhere around the Sweet 16. It kind of settled. Maybe the last couple of years is why the upsets got a little bit more attention this year than they had in the past. I think because of teams that have made it through that Sweet 16 and into the Elite Eight is when things started to, you know, those upsets started to become bigger this year than they were last year at this time.
Well, Virginia Commonwealth, without question. Now, of course, everybody wants to jump on Butler's bandwagon.
Sure.
About, you know, look at what Butler was misseeded. Okay? And people have to realize that Indiana in the Kelvin Sampson era, okay, the post-Kelvin Sampson era, Butler was getting the players Indiana had been getting. Okay? So they were getting the players that Indiana had been getting before. And that's how they stocked their team. And you become tournament tested. Well, they've been tournament tested, no doubt. VCU, of course, made it to the Final Four last year, and they made it out of Dayton. But again, for the 24th straight year, you know the last non-top four team to win it?
To win the tournament, it's the whole thing, not just make it to the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I don't know. You're going to pull one out from the 60s, aren't you?
No. It's only 24 years back. I said it's 24 years.
Okay. Go ahead. I didn't hear you say 24.
Villanova. And I maintain, and that night, I was doing talk radio here in State College at the time. That night, it was a Monday night, I said Villanova could be Georgetown.
Did you say that Rolly would be running out screaming in the middle of the court?
No, but I said, and here was my reasoning that way. See, I don't consider that an awesome and incredible upset. I know they had to shoot 78% to win.
You're the only one. There's a lot of people that think that was an awesome upset.
If there's any team I thought that could beat Georgetown, it was Villanova. And here's the reason why. I even said it that night.
Okay.
Right? They played so many times that Villanova was not in awe of Georgetown at all. And it had success against them. And Ed Pinckney had gone head-to-head with Ewing so many times, because it's a Big East rivalry, that Pinckney knew how to play him and had no fear of playing against him.
That's an excellent point.
And that was the point I tried to make that night. I said, look, Villanova can win. And, of course, I got called from people left and right. I thought, you know, they want to put me in the insane asylum. It's amazing. The next night, those same people did not call up.
They disappeared.
And suddenly they disappeared. You know, they got the meanness out of their system in one night. See, and to this day, I know what they shot. I understand that. And there was no, you know, and the shot clock was not in place then. And the three-point shot wasn't in place then. So you could have longer possessions and so forth. Thus, they hit the key shots when they had to hit them. And they played well defensively all night. But you're talking about a team in Villanova, while being an 8 seed, if they were to have played St. John's in that Final Four, because Georgetown beat St. John's, that was the Big East Final Four where three Big East schools were in. They played at Rupp Arena in Lexington. If Villanova had played St. John's instead of the other semifinal game, they may not have made it to the championship game, because St. John's was a dreadful matchup that year for Villanova. It just wasn't right. St. John's not only beat Villanova like the 2 years leading up, but they actually beat them rather handily. Just were not a great matchup. Everything in sports about how a game plays out is about matchups. You know, where do you gain advantages and where do you negate an advantage that the other team usually has? Well, Villanova could negate most of the advantages that Georgetown had. They had Pinckney who could match up with Ewing. McLean was every bit as good as the point guard for Georgetown. Now, they played it right and they hit the shots when they had to that night, right? But the pure matchup, there was no intimidation factor. None. Teams were intimidated by Georgetown at that point. Georgetown was in a great run under John Thompson. They intimidated teams when they walked on the court with their pure size, with Patrick Ewing. I mean, they had all that, but not Villanova. They had gone nose to nose and had some great games over the past couple of years. And just because there were, you know, again, we get so hung up on what the number seed is, you don't look at the quality of the basketball or the matchup. Now, tonight, Kansas-Kentucky can be a good matchup. It can be a good matchup because Withy's playing much better than he has at any point this year, and he has a shot to at least give Davis a little bit of trouble inside. Withy, to his credit, I thought did a great job of making Sullinger get off his game on Saturday. But they're going to need Johnson and Taylor to do some damage from the outside. And Taylor's 0 for 20 in the tournament from three-point land. They're going to need that tonight. Kevin now jumps in with analysis of push to pass.
No, what I was going to ask you was the Louisville-Kentucky game, was that a little bit higher scoring game than what you had figured on? Because we talked about that. I thought it was going to be Kentucky would have no big issue with this game, but you were talking about the defense in that game, and I was surprised by the scoring that was in that game.
It was a 69-62 game.
But when you were talking the defense, I was thinking maybe 60 might be pushing it.
Well, no, I mean, you know, you're talking about an outstanding offensive team in Kentucky. To be held in the 60s is good defense by Louisville.
That is 50s for most teams. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, part of that, too, is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist only played 6 minutes in the first half. And you notice Kentucky had a much better handle on the game in the first half when he was in. And that makes a big difference. A big difference.
Now, seeing Ohio State as many times as you have this year, and what was the difference in the second half of that particular game?
It wasn't the second half. A lot of it was the emotion of Kansas. But you know what? Kansas has been a team that has been very hard to put away the entire postseason. NC State thought they had them. Purdue definitely thought they had them. Ohio State thought they had them. And even the end of it was a really good game with North Carolina. It was, 68-67, right? And they scored the last 12 points of the game to win. For whatever reason, Kansas sees the finish line, and they ratchet it up. And just when teams think they have them, they don't.
So what you're saying is Kansas, when they see the finish line, hits the push to pass.
They're very hard to put away. And it's both ends. It's their defense in the last 3 minutes gets really good, and they hit shots. And Bill Self coaches the full game, all the way through. Does a really good job. Isn't it ironic, two former Illinois coaches now in that state? Bruce Weber at Kansas State, Bill Self at Kansas. I mean, where's Lou Henson? Manhattan College? Wichita State? 1-800-795-9565. Let's get your comments all on all this and more. 1-800-795-9565. We'll talk about baseball, basketball, Masters coming up this week, or if you have any IRL questions, we have Kevin on board.
When you buy anything, isn't it best to see people who've been around for a long time, satisfying customers just like you all the time? Makes sense, doesn't it? So when you're in the market for a quality new or pre-owned vehicle, the only place to go is Sunbury Motors. They've been in business since 1915 partnering up folks just like you with a vehicle that best suits their needs and budget. Their service after the sale can't be beat. And if you like selection, there's none better than Sunbury Motors. Fords, Kias, Lincolns, Mercurys, Hyundais, Sunbury Motors sells them all. Their finance teams are unmatched. They'll be glad to help you secure the affordable option you want on any new or pre-owned vehicle you find on their lots. See the people who've been in business since 1915. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln Mercury, and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com.
I got a feeling. I got this show is going to...
I was going to say, where are you going with this one?
I got a feeling, all right.
Kentucky, 6.5 over Kansas. There's your line.
I don't care.
I answered that question for somebody now.
Oh, somebody did call in about that? Okay, that's fine. I never worry about such things.
That's not a big line, 6.5, though.
Well, I would. It's the national championship game.
You would hope it would be a close game. That's right.
I mean, these are two. I mean, Kansas is, from what I understand, the 5 seed in the tournament.
Overall.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're talking about the, you know, it came down to them as to whether it was a 4 or 5. They're the 5 seed in the tournament. The Sealands Grove Orchestra kicks it into another gear. They're sounding brilliant as always, but it's no surprise whatsoever to this veteran campaigner. 1-800-795-9565. Kevin and I with you for the next 90 minutes. News is next on WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
The Chateau, home of the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today our show is being sponsored by Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury and online at purdyinsurance.com. Let's bring in somebody who constantly needs insurance, Kevin Herr.
No, that's assurance. You're close.
So I assure you, you won't be here Monday.
I hope you're right. For the first time ever, I hope you're right.
Now, Penn State football goes back to work today. Spring practice for the Nittany Lions. This will be number 4. They did did a lot of work on Saturday. And they'll have 4 practices this week. Now, spring football, if it's a beautiful day, 2 weeks from Saturday, the crowd we expect is going to be huge. Something that the old USFL hoped they had in the spring.
You were looking at the webpage, haven't you? SteveJonesShow.com has the really cool new USFL logo.
Yes. Now, they're not going to play for a year. They don't even have franchises yet. I think this is a golden opportunity for Hummel's Wharf to get a team.
Well, they're going to go in places where there are no current NFL teams. So, you know,
Hummel's Wharf.
It's a chance. There's a chance.
Hummel's Wharf. Come on.
Play the games at Chickalamy Stadium. There's an opportunity.
This would be great. Yeah. Chief can get out there. You and the Chief can announce some games. It'd be great.
Oh, no, no, no. Chief's going to coach the games.
Chief's going to coach the games.
Chief's going to coach games.
Yeah. So they're going to go into areas where people have not been in before.
I'm
not so sure about that. I think you have to have a mix, Kevin. First of all, what's one of the greatest teachers of all time? History.
Okay.
History is a great teacher. So now let's examine the history of other leagues. Now, the AFL came in. Let's go back to the old All-America Conference. The old All-America Conference had teams in the 40s where they were in Cleveland, obviously the Browns, they were in San Francisco, they were in Baltimore. Those are the three teams, the franchises that were absorbed. They also had a team in Los Angeles that didn't do well. They had a team in Buffalo that actually did do well. A lot of people thought Buffalo was going to get absorbed into the NFL and did not. They had a team in Chicago, and that's how they based their league. Right? Now, you go to the AFL. Now, the AFL came up with 8 franchises. Now, this is a point where the NFL had 12 teams, right, Kev? 12 teams. So they put a franchise in Dallas at the same time that the Dallas Cowboys were put in Dallas.
Not the best marketing.
Well, no, it's the way it worked. You know, the NFL was not going to cede Dallas to a new league. And then the other franchise was put in Minnesota. And the second that the AFL put a franchise in Minnesota, the NFL announced they were expanding and putting the Vikings in there to start in 61. So the franchise in Minnesota never played, and they became the Oakland Raiders. Learning here?
I am. I'm observing. Yeah, but there's one factor in this whole thing, though, that I think you're leading up to. I'll let you go.
Okay. Now, the original Chargers spent the first year in Los Angeles. Couldn't compete with the Rams. They moved to San Diego. Buffalo had it to itself. Boston had it to itself, but had terrible stadium situation. They felt they had to have a team in New York, so they had the Jets. They played the Polo Grounds, awful, finally going to Shea Stadium. If you can believe Shea Stadium could help a franchise, it did. All right. So, but they did not. You notice, though, the AFL did not put a team in Chicago, which is interesting. They did put one in Los Angeles, then they went to San Diego. They put one in Houston because they made some inroads into the Deep South. And eventually, after 3 seasons, the Texans out of Dallas moved to Kansas City. It just became too hard to compete, even though the Texans were probably a better football team than the Cowboys were back then. Then the World League comes up. And the World League did a lot of what you're talking about, Kev.
Right, the World League of American Football.
No, the World Football League.
Oh, you're talking. I'm sorry, you're talking about the World. Oh, okay. All right. I got you. I'm a little too far ahead.
Right. They put a team originally in Boston called the Bulldogs. Never played a game. They had the New York Stars. Just couldn't cut it. They moved to Charlotte. They put a team in Jacksonville. They put a team in Houston. They then moved to Shreveport. They then put a team, let's see, I'm trying to think. They had the Southern California Sun. They played in Anaheim. Pat Hayden played for them.
Did they have a team in Hawaii, too?
The Hawaiians. Ted Kwolek, the former Nittany Lion, tight end, played for them. He left the Niners. And they had the Chicago Fire, then the Chicago Wind. Then they had the Detroit Wheels, who folded in the first year.
Well, there were only, 2 years of it, though?
Yeah. The Philadelphia Bell, King Corcoran, John Land.
Did you have Birmingham in there?
Yeah, the Birmingham Americans, who won the only championship.
And Elsie Greenwood came from them.
Right, and Charlie Haraway played for them from the Redskins. And they beat Orlando. The Florida Blazers, who played out of Orlando.
With Philadelphia Eagle Bill Burgie.
Yes. And I think they had John Reeves as their quarterback, I think.
No, I think Davis was their quarterback. Bob Davis.
For Florida?
Yeah.
Okay.
But Reeves was somewhere, I think.
Mm-hmm. And then there was the Memphis Southmen. They actually were originally the Toronto Northmen.
Well, that explains the name change.
Well, what happened was that Howard Ballard, who owned the Toronto Maple Leafs, also owned the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and told the Toronto Argonauts it would be crushing to let that team play. They never gave him a lease in Toronto. So John Bassett, who eventually became the owner of the Tampa Bay Bandits in the USFL, before they ever started, moved the team to Memphis. And the Southmen drew. And, of course, they had the three big signings. They signed Larry Zonka, Paul Warfield, Jim Kick. Didn't make it. Okay, didn't make it. Got to the second, you know, the second year, and they disbanded about two-thirds of the way through the season. Gary Davidson was the guy that tried to get it going. He's the same guy that got the WHA going. Now you have the USFL. Okay, the USFL I thought was going to make it.
Especially with some of the guys that they were able to snag.
Right, and they were signing high-profile guys. They signed Herschel Walker. They signed Doug Flutie. They had Reggie White in Memphis. They had Mike Rozier playing in Pittsburgh. They had guys all over the place.
Jim Kelly.
Steve Young was playing for the Los Angeles Express. Houston Gamblers had Jim Kelly. And they, again, had a mix. And the reason they expanded is because they wanted the expansion cash. Thus, they went from 12 to 18 teams. And in order to do something like this, you have to have patience. And you have to stick with what you have and what works. And probably the most successful franchise in that whole group, I mean, the New Jersey Generals certainly were successful, but the Tampa Bay Bandits, who had a completely opposite philosophy of J. Walter Duncan and then eventually Donald Trump as owners of the Generals. There's nothing wrong with what Trump did until he decided, I want to go head-to-head with the NFL. Part of this is the ability to carve your own niche. And I think you have to do it with a mixture of markets that are going to be attractive to television and also some markets where you think you can gain a foothold and be the only show in town. You have to do it with a mix.
Right now, Los Angeles is an open door until the NFL puts a team there.
Right. Well, Los Angeles is an open door until they put a team there.
I mean, they're going to eventually, but that's an opportunity right there.
I agree.
But the big problem with all these leagues, with the exception of the AFL, because the AFL was actually became a thorn in the NFL side, and that's why the merger happened. And that's mainly because of Al Davis spending money freely at that point. But the big problem was, as you mentioned, mismanagement and trying to expand too fast, especially for the USFL. Spring football was a great idea. Yes. There's a missing football has grown in popularity almost to the point where it's, and I believe this personally, that it's taken over the term national pastime from baseball.
Oh, that happened a long time ago. And I love baseball. But that happened a long time ago.
And the problem is baseball season runs a long time. The football season doesn't.
Yes, but here's the other part why the NFL is not going to get a competitor. Okay? They have contracts with Fox.
Sure they do, yeah.
CBS.
Right on.
NBC, ESPN, ABC. Even though it's not on ABC, ESPN's owned by ABC. Okay? Disney owns both. They have contracts with all the major networks. Now, when the AFL came in, the AFL originally had a contract with ABC, and then a couple seasons in, switched to NBC. They had major national contracts, because at that point, the NFL had all their games on CBS. There was no split. So you had a wide-open television landscape. When the WFL came in as a fall league, you had CBS doing the NFC, NBC doing the AFC, and ABC doing Monday Night Football. There was no ESPN in 74, 75. Okay? Their television contract was with TVS.
Well, that's right.
Okay, that was where their TV. So now.
I remember looking at reasons.
So now the NFL has that locked up. Now, a spring developmental league, I think, has a chance to fly if it's backed by the NFL. And here's. Let me tell you the other part where the USFL had some success. And this is the part where it goes under the radar, and then when you remember it, you say, oh, yeah. They designated 5 colleges to each team. And Penn State, for example, they were the territorial right of the Philadelphia Stars. And thus you had Chuck Fusina, Scott Fitzky, several other former Nittany Lions playing for the Philadelphia Stars.
I wondered how that happened, because I do remember seeing a lot of Penn State guys playing there, and I just thought it was coincidence. I never realized that.
No, you were assigned 5 schools under territorial rights. And to me, that's a drawing card. I mean, that's a drawing card to get that. And I think it's a smart move. And I think they have to, you know, that any league would have to consider that as part of their formula. Now, are you going to lose, quote, the Penn State guys to the NFL? You're going to be, oh, yeah, of course you are. But there are enough other guys that have Penn State roots that you may want to go see play.
But I know what a lot of people are thinking, and this is what I thought when I first read the article, was this is just the World League of American Football, or NFL Europe as it became later, moving over to the United States. And that's what I think the intention of this is. Because the only drawback with NFL Europe were the fact that the games happened at odd times for the U.S. television market, so they had to run them on delay. And you know what? There's a big issue for some reason watching a football game on delay that a lot of people won't want to do it. They want to watch the game live or not at all. And then the factor of the NFL spending all the money they had to get the players over there, get them back, and so on and so forth. So that's where I think this works, because Europe set the opportunity up for them.
Galen Hall coached over there.
Sure.
Coached with Frankfurt.
The Galaxy.
Yeah. Jack Picknell, the former Boston College coach, had a really nice run with the Barcelona Dragons. But I think if you set it up in something like this where you can keep it with some territorial rights, I think you have an opportunity to draw people and have some success.
What was it you said last week? You gave a statistic last week. There was a certain number of players that will go on from college football to the NFL.
Oh, it's not. It's less than, you know, I mean, we both know it's only like 5 to 6%.
Right. I couldn't remember. I knew it was
94%. The other 94%, I better get their degrees.
Right. Well, here's an opportunity for another maybe 5% to at least play in the States, continue to play football, and maybe have an opportunity to go to the next level. Now, here's the real question that I have. Let's say this all does come down, and the NFL is in on it and is very happy to be a part of it. What happens to the NFL's taking over of the Arena League now? Are they going to drop the Arena League completely?
What does the Arena League give you?
I agree with you. As I said many times, I've tried watching it. I really have, and I can't get into it.
It doesn't get you anything. Spring League works out well. You get guys in there, and if some guys come through there, you say to yourself, let's get them into camp. You know, it gives a chance to develop some talent. Now, this is not the first time the NFL has had a developmental league. Okay, the Atlantic Coast Football League. You know, first of all, the Continental Football League in the 60s, and the Atlantic Coast Football League had working agreements. Bridgeport, Connecticut had a team. They were affiliated with the New York Jets. Lowell, Massachusetts had a team, and they were affiliated with the Patriots. All right. Hartford had a team, the Hartford Knights. They were affiliated with the Buffalo Bills. Pottstown had a team. They were affiliated with the Philadelphia Eagles. So actually, this is not a new concept of a minor league. Some guys came out of there. Some guys came out. Otis Sistrunk came out of the Continental Football League. Marv Hubbard came out of the Atlantic Coast Football League. He played for Hartford and then went to the Oakland Raiders. Ken Stabler played a season in the Continental Football League before he played in the NFL with the Raiders.
He also played in one of the other leagues you were talking about, too. The one that had Memphis. Didn't play for them, but it was that same league that had Memphis and Hawaii.
Yeah, World League.
World League.
Football
League. Yeah, World WFL. Football League. Thank you.
Yeah, but he was in the Continental League before them. He was in the Continental Football League. Spinning the lightning segment for you.
I've learned a lot. There were a lot of leagues that I'd never heard of, a lot of leagues that I had, but a lot of leagues that I never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just hoping that someday my World League of American Football mint card set's worth something. So far, no good.
Well, if you're counting on that to be your pension plan, if I were you, I would go to a convenience store. They have something called Mega Millions. Our number is 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565. Back with more of this enlightening segment in a moment.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car, picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word, Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Kevin Hur on Air Qatar. Our number 1-800-795-9565 as we reminisce about old football leagues today. Kevin wants to bring back the Pottsville Maroons.
Oh, I think that'd be a great opportunity for the USFL. The Pottsville Maroons come back.
And they would play where?
Well, let's see. They played at Minersville the last time they played at the Minersville High School. I'm sure we could find a place for them to play.
Oh, boy. A lot of places you're talking about. Well, I guess some of the facilities are all right. I mean, they keep trying to play in Hartford all the time. At least now they have Rentschler Field. They used to have this place called Dillon Stadium.
Oh. Would Beaver Stadium be open?
You know what? They actually had an idea. Somebody had an idea once about putting teams in college stadiums and using that model I talked about. Like, okay.
More seats
in the spring.
More seats than most of the stadiums in the NFL.
Yes, and a lot of them would be cleverly disguised as empty seats. News at the top of the hour. When's Bartlett coming back? I've had enough of this.